I couldn't stop if I wanted to. A 9-to-5 is something that I don't wanna do. Sit in the cubicle miserable as I slave away. Getting complacent with life as my dreams fade away. Nah, motivation to go harder. I'd rather spit that real.
Good morning, good evening, good night, folks. This is your Five Tool Sports Podcast host, Woody Massey. I'm here with all of the tools today. We got CJ McLaughlin.
What it do?
Jump, 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 jump. And we got Brandon Coach Lumberg.
What's up, Woody?
What's going on, man? Nasty Nate Parker.
How's it going, fellas?
What's going on, bud? Well, guys, we got some news, some big news, some news that rocked the NFL world. Possibly the greatest Falcon to ever put on the jersey, Julio Jones, traded to the Tennessee Titans for the second and final stage of his career, possibly. Falcons receive 2022 second-round pick, 2023 fourth-round pick, and the Titans receive Julio Jones in 2023 sixth-round pick. Guys, does this make the Titans a legit contender?
I mean, yeah. Were they legit contenders last year? Like, going into 2020?
Not with that pass rush.
Now, okay, so if that's what we're basing it off of, then no. If you didn't feel like they were contenders coming into last season. But, I mean, I don't think he's a needle mover. I think he pushes it forward a little bit. But I think they were feeling the need. Corey Davis obviously left. Brandon's been on record saying, I mean, it's 200 targets and some odd yards that's kind of open. And so at this point in his career, Julio, he's past his prime. He's still a 1,000-yard receiver, so don't take that the wrong way. But he's past his prime, and I'm not sure if there's too much of a cushion between the player that Corey Davis is and what Julio Jones is right now. And they have holes on defense, and I mean, look, I think they're a playoff team, and then we'll kind of go from there, and we'll see.
Well, man, I think, like you've said, the best ability is availability, and I don't think we see Julio play a full season here. So maybe Corey Davis not as skilled as Julio, but Julio's probably going to play like 12 games this year because he's going to get a hamstring injury. Well, as he usually does, and he's just getting older, and he may need to take an extra week or two to rest and save his strength for the playoffs. So, I mean, it definitely helps A.J. Brown.
Oh, yeah, it definitely does. I feel like it opens things up for A.J. Brown a little bit more and vice versa in this offense. I think when you look at the core receiver group prior to Julio Jones being traded to the Titans, you had guys like Chester Rogers and Josh Reynolds on the roster. Both those guys have a career combined total of 224 receptions for 2,600 yards. Now you're going to add Julio Jones with a career total of 848 receptions and nearly 13,000 yards. That is a massive upgrade. You know, considering Julio's age at 32, probably has two, maybe you could squeeze three high-quality years out of him.
And, you know, this doesn't plug also, I think the biggest loss they had on that offense, it wasn't Corey Davis. It was Jonnu Smith.
Yeah.
He was a big part of that offense. He'd stretch the field. He'd keep that seam honest. Like, that's going to be a big hole in the middle of the field. So we'll see how they do. Did they draft a tight end this year?
No, but they have Anthony Firkser, who he's been in the league for 3 years. This will be going into his fourth year. He showed promise. He's roughly about the same size as Jonnu Smith. Not real big tight ends, but about 6'2", 6'3", 245, roughly. Pretty good athlete. he struggles in the running game a bit, but he's a good pass catcher. So, I mean, again, I don't think it moves the needle, them getting Julio. But I don't think it's a big jump. I disagree with Brandon here. I don't think it's a big jump between Julio and Corey Davis.
Corey Davis definitely had the best year of his career last year. We've been waiting for that.
Definitely a big jump from Chester Rogers, though.
For sure. Definitely. That is true.
I feel like CJ, and this is a question for everyone, would you rather have Julio Jones or Antonio Brown in your squad?
Right now?
Right now.
Julio Jones.
Same, similar age, Julio. Similar place in their career.
Julio, he's still more athletic.
I think I'd take AB.
I just know Julio won't verbally attack my owner and front office. And
well, I will.
So I guess Julio provides a different level of consistency than Antonio Brown does, I suppose.
Yeah, you don't have to hide your kids, hide your wife around.
I think my issue with this whole trade is I think the Titans got good value, but I also, like CJ says, not a needle mover. They didn't fix their defense. Like, their defense is still going to have trouble stopping people from putting up points, and that was the biggest reason the Titans didn't make a deep run, is they can't stop people from putting up points in them.
Yeah.
And also, Julio became a little bit expendable after the emergence of Russell Gage last year. After Week 8, he was on pace for 1,000 yards and, I believe, 8 to 10 touchdowns. So that will be a good combo for the with the addition of Kyle Pitts.
They'll be just fine. There.
Little fantasy plug, a little something. Green Bay Packers mandatory mini camp starts Tuesday. Aaron Rodgers probably not going to be there. Planning on skipping. Subject to a $93,000 fine. I mean, he could wipe with that, the amount of money he makes in a season, but man, those will add up though.
How much?
$93,000.
$93,000. Jesus Lord.
Yeah. But so Rodgers, who's gonna buck first here? Who's gonna blink?
Personally, I think that, I mean, look, if we rewind roughly a month ago when all this stuff started, we all had the perception that Rodgers kind of held the power in this situation. But I think the closer we draw to week one of the NFL season, the pendulum has kind of swung in favor of Green Bay, just because I think Aaron Rodgers, his competitiveness, him being at his peak, coming off an MVP season, like, he doesn't want to waste a year and sit out or maybe retire or hold out when he could possibly be going out there to, you know, win a championship. Green Bay, they're not far from a championship. As we've seen, the last 2 years, they made it to the conference championship and lost. So I don't think he'll pass that up, personally.
Still need a second wide receiver.
Yeah, he's still waiting on that. I will say this, though, man. He's so competitive, he might just hold out anyway. You know, that's just his competitive nature. He's
competitively hold out.
Yeah, he's not going to let him win. I mean,
I like that.
It's nice.
I'm telling you, this man will retire before he plays for the Packers again. He's that
bad. He'll be on Jeopardy.
Him right, and Devontae will be hosting. If he retires now, he can go down as probably like the number 6th or 7th greatest quarterback ever then.
Oh, God. You disrespecting this man's career.
Bro, I'm not, but...
He's for sure... would you put him behind? Ahead of Peyton Manning or behind?
Definitely behind.
He's way behind Bart Starr. I mean, shoot.
Hey, look, I have the same number of rings on my hand that Aaron Rodgers has on his hand. Just happens to be that mine is a wedding ring and his is a Super Bowl ring. But all he has is one.
Wait, he's got a couple of wedding rings.
I mean, he's got one. So does Peyton.
Oh, one. My bad. One wedding ring.
Peyton got two, bro.
Oh, yeah, the Broncos was number
two. We always
two.
Forget That's that right. one. I That's know. Right. Yeah, I forget yeah, it, too. Yeah. But it still
because
counts.
Because he limped into that
no,
game.
No, no, no. Don't sit here and discredit one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time to further.
Well, he had the best game of his season that year in the Super Bowl. He played it all out on the line.
Leave Peyton alone. Leave him alone.
So, better quarterback. Who's more...
Let's not get into that conversation.
I'm scared. I know, right?
I'm just saying, Eli, there's a case.
Oh,
a
I
case.
Knew it.
I'm not going to make it, but there's a case. So Greg Olsen, some heartwarming news for a change. Tragedy struck his family. His son, TJ, who's 8 years old, was on his way to passing with heart failure. And in the last second, I think they said he was like month out of before death or something. They found a heart plant transplant match from someone who came in from an accident or something, and he got a heart transplant at 8 years old.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Awesome. That's great news. I know I saw a video of little TJ Olsen, I think a few days ago, in the hospital bed, and, you know, he, you know, looked to be in good spirits. So definitely a heartwarming story for the NFL, for Greg Olsen, you know, former.
What is with tight ends and tragedy, man? Was it Todd Heap whose son passed because he accidentally backed over him in the driveway with his truck because he like ran behind his car?
Oh, yeah. Now we have backup cameras.
Yeah. Yeah, that was
That's man. Awful.
Right? How do you live with yourself after that? Just, oh.
Man, that's tough.
Former NFL wide receiver and Bengal great Chad Johnson. Ocho Cinco. Fought on the Logan Paul Floyd Mayweather pay-per-view card this weekend, and he didn't look that bad. Didn't look great. But you look that bad.
He went down in the fourth round by a nice little right hand by my man, Brian Maxwell, Southwest VA stand up, Roanoke, Virginia representing. All right, I'm done.
Nice. All right. Never heard someone rep Roanoke so hard.
Hey, it's Southwest Virginia. I rep all of VA. You heard?
Well, I'm sorry. But, Floyd Mayweather, Logan Paul. Did you guys watch the fight? I watched it. I watched the monstrosity.
I heard there was some issues with the Showtime stream or something.
Oh, there were a bunch of issues with the stream, actually. But, you know, when you watch it illegally and for free, hey, you know, no issues over here. I'm not complaining.
5-2 Sports Podcast does not condone or support any illegal streaming at all.
Allegedly. Watched it for free. But yeah, you know, Logan Paul is like one of the best trolls I've ever seen, though. This man walked to the ring wearing a freaking Charizard Pokemon card iced out on a gold chain.
Bro, that was dope. That was for the culture.
Yeah,
like, bro, that was for a whole generation right there.
Yeah, that was wild. Well, he said after the press conference, now this card's worth $1 million.
Oh yeah, like an NFT type of thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh man, except you and these non-fungible tokens, man.
I'm still trying to figure out what the hell it is. So I'm no expert.
So do we maybe next is Jake Paul versus Tyrone Woodley. Floyd Mayweather actually volunteered to train Tyrone Woodley for the fight.
Yeah,
that'll be interesting.
Yeah, well.
But let's continue with the football.
And what we got for the show today? What we discussing, man?
We're gonna be covering offensive line rankings. I know it's not the most exciting thing in the world. I know it's not the most exciting thing in the world, but knowing which teams have the best offensive lines can give you that little bit of push that you need in fantasy. Because
was that the wrong kind of push?
Yeah, that was the wrong kind of push.
Excuse me.
But the way some of those dudes be looking, you know, they're bending over. They're probably letting it rip a couple times. But
that ain't mud back there.
But yeah, no, if you know who has the best offensive line, that can make an average running back above average. That can make a above average running back into a Pro Bowler. So that these are the things, the little underlying things that will help you with your fantasy season. Or when it comes to over-under bets or anything like that. So we're going to go over the offensive line run blocking grades, offensive line pass blocking grades. We'll keep it short because who wants to discuss offensive line for more than 30 minutes? But when we come back, my boy C, he's going to give us the trivia right after this ad.
Hey, guys, it's your boy CSPN, and you know I love watching and analyzing football. There's nothing that trumps the CSPN eye test, but let's be real. The numbers do matter. If you want to make sure the numbers match your eye test, give our sister site a check at www.footballscout365.com. Football Scout 365 has become my go-to source for situational football scouting and analytics tool. Football Scout 365 offers advanced NFL, NFL draft, and fantasy football analysis to help you take your knowledge of the game to the next level. So head on over to footballscout365.com and join for free today. That's footballscout365.com.
Welcome to 5-Tool Trivia.
Hey, and so, as I told you guys, we have a nice, juicy trivia question for you guys today. I think you guys will really enjoy it, although I don't think you'll get it right. But without further ado, here we go. Hall of Fame running back Barry Sanders and Hall of Fame linebacker Lawrence Taylor were both named to 10 consecutive Pro Bowls to start an NFL career. Who was the last player to start their career with 10 consecutive Pro Bowl appearances?
Well, I'm guessing it's an offensive lineman.
Say it again, Woody.
I said, I'm guessing it's an offensive lineman because we're talking offensive line today.
Perhaps. I'm going to read it one more time, and what I'll do, I'll kick it. Let's see. We'll go Nate first, and then we'll go Woody, then we'll go Brandon. We'll go Brandon last because he never seems to really know none of the answers.
Joe Thomas, the Cleveland Browns.
Okay, so Nate's answer is Joe Thomas from the Cleveland Browns.
Woody. Jonathan Ogden.
Jonathan Ogden, okay. Left tackle for the Ravens. Yeah. Solid, had a great career. And Brandon, last but not least.
He's arguably the GOAT.
Yeah, he is. He is.
Well, I mean.
Great guesses.
That's who I was going to guess. I was going to guess the same. But I'll just go with Joe Thomas.
All right. Well, guess what, fellas? Joe Thomas is the correct answer.
Damn.
He got drafted in 06, 06, 07, and from 2007 to 2016, he made 10 consecutive Pro Bowls. His 11th year in the league, he actually, I think he tore his tricep, which ended his season. He ended up retiring after that because he was suffering from memory loss, from early memory loss. And he said, you know what? I got my payday. I'm going to get out of here and enjoy the time with my family. So kudos to Joe Thomas, one of the great offensive linemen of our time. Too bad he played with the Cleveland Browns. But
man, imagine if he stuck around for a couple more years with this line.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, guys. Well, let's jump into the offensive line rankings. We're going to start with the top five offensive line run blocking grades. So the guys that we have in the top five are the teams, the franchises. We have the number one overall run blocking team projected for the 2021 season is the San Francisco 49ers. After adding Trent Williams and Alex Mack, future Hall of Fame center, veteran bringing him in from the Falcons. And we saw what happened when the Falcons brought over Alex Mack before they made a Super Bowl run. So, you know, a good center. You can make a good line, a great line. Brandon, break us down the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, so, I mean, the 49ers, they obviously made it clear what their, you know, what their motive would be. And I think it became a little bit more clear to me after the fact, while I was doing the grading, for example, for the offensive line, I started to recognize, okay, they're building something, you know, that's going to be high powered, but powered by a run game. And something that really tipped me off, obviously, and we all know that Trey Lance is one of those, he's a quarterback who has the ability to run in addition to having that powerful arm on top of that. So I feel like there's a motive here. for the future. And we already know that Shanahan loves to run the football to set up everything else. I feel like he's just like really re-emphasized that. And that's really where the 49ers are headed. So that's really the take that I have for the 49ers and their offensive line grade as a whole. It's a far like their pass grade, for example, for the offensive line, or their overall grade combined with the run game is 7th overall in the rankings, for example. So they do have a real, really solid chance to dominate the division on the ground for sure.
John Lynch is doing his thing in San Fran. We always talk about Kyle Shanahan, and he's a mastermind. He's a genius when it comes to the X's and O's. But don't make no mistake about it. John Lynch is in that front office, and he's doing it the right way. He's building from inside out. You look at their defensive line, one of the best. You look at the offensive line, one of the best. You always want to book in left tackle, and that can be the hardest things to find. Well, they ended up trading for Trent Williams a couple years ago, got that book in left tackle. And then last year, they dealt with injury, Trent Williams, a few of the other guys up front. So that's the biggest thing, health. You got to stay healthy up front. But by all accounts, everything that Brandon said, I 100% agree, man. If those guys can stay healthy, they're going to move mountains up there.
And you saw they got their stable of backs, too. No one that is, like, amazing or an elite running back. Ryan Mostert, you can make the argument that he has elite speed. He can take it to the house from anywhere on the field. But with this line and how solid it is, all those guys, like, kind of move up a little in the rankings. Just, you know what I mean? It's like
I would run 1,000 yards behind that line, man.
I do want to point out too, one cut runners in this zone scheme that Shanahan likes to run. He's multiple with his scheme, and I've been researching the crap out of this because I'm putting something together, really for CJ, because CJ wanted to talk about it. It's something I haven't even talked to him about yet. But they love to run the inside zone, they love to run outside zone, then they like to hit you with pin and pull, and then they might hit you with a counter play. But like you can see the vision of, okay, Elijah Mitchell. He's going to be in the Raheem Mostert mold, and then you're going to have a guy. Yeah, you're going to have a guy in Trey Sermon.
Yeah, you keep talking about Elijah Mitchell before Trey Sermon. Is he going to sneak up on Trey?
They drafted both as kind of the future 1-2 punch. I think Mostert's contract might be up this year at the end of this year as well. So I think they're looking ahead.
Yeah. And look, that if you go back, if you just watch the 49ers, I guess, top plays from just the last 2 years, one of their bread and butter plays is they run like a toss to Raheem Mostert, right?
Yep, on the outside.
And just like Brandon said, he as soon as that seam opens up, he sticks his foot in the ground and he hits it going full speed before the hole closes up. And like that Elijah Mitchell guy, he sounds a lot like Raheem Mostert, to where he might be able to put his foot in the ground and hit that seam as fast as possible.
So, Mostert is sneaky with the power, too. He runs through a lot of arm tackles just because he hits that high speed so quick.
Yeah, he does, and he's short, and he's low to the ground, and, you know, deceptively powerful, for sure.
Yeah. Number two on the list, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Super Bowl champions. Last year, we saw the Tampa Bay Bucs go out and protect their greatest asset, the GOAT, Tom Brady. They drafted a left tackle in the first round, or was it right tackle?
He's going to eventually move to left, but worse is a right tackle right now, yeah.
Yeah, and then they brought in veterans, Ryan Jensen, Donovan Smith. So the Bucs, I mean, they did what they had to do. You bring in an old man like Brady, got to keep him up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and the run game is going to be a massive surprise too, I think, for Tampa Bay this year. I believe the 1-2 of Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette, we're going to see some of that. You'll see a combination of Gio Bernard in there on pass downs as well. Gio Bernard, by the way, and one of the reasons I think we're going to see more of him on the field this year is his ability to pass block is actually high level. So that's another guy to keep an eye on. But man, this team is just so loaded. And touching on the offensive line situation across the board, I mean, Tristan Wirfs is legitimately going to be, he could be arguably the best tackle within the next couple of years in the NFL overall. But yeah, this is a team that they have everything.
Yeah.
And it's hard to deny.
And they brought everybody back.
Yeah. It's
wild.
The one thing that I do want to add, I agree with this ranking for Tampa Bay's offensive line. Is this run grade a pass? This pass block.
He's looking at the run grades right now, but overall, CJ,
yeah,
they're number two, period, overall. And I'll pull this pass grade.
The only thing that I would say about Tampa Bay's offensive line, and part of it was you had a rookie right tackle in there starting. You didn't have an offseason. And a lot of what you do at the line of scrimmage on offense, it's chemistry, it's continuity. And they were inconsistent at times last year, but towards the end of the season is when they became a well-oiled machine. So I would expect that coming into this season. But last year they were a bit up and down, passing and running the ball, from what I saw.
They had that breaking point. Who did they play? They lost to by like 30 points. And then after that, Kansas City. Yeah. Was it Kansas City? Yeah.
Yeah, they got smacked.
And then they just came together. Tom rallied the troops.
Yeah.
Looked like a different team after that. Tom had time. He wasn't on his back. His deep ball got better.
They did. Statistically, I want to say they finished in the bottom third as far as, like, running the ball, yards per game. Obviously, they're better than where they finished at. But, I think, again, having a full off season, having that continuity, I think – we will see them be undoubtedly one of the best units this season.
And people, we really can't sleep on their pickup of Gio Bernard, too, especially with the pass blocking. But Gio, literally, they had the chance to go get James White. He was available. They were talking to him. But they chose Gio. Like, he's been, like, the best backup in the league for, like, 7 years.
It's comparable. I mean, Gio, James White, tomato, tomato, in my opinion.
Yeah, but James White and Tom got history. So speaks a lot. Now, the third-ranked overall run blocking offense, not a surprise here, the Cleveland Browns, with almost 2,000-yard rushers last season. Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, these boys are big and they bully people. This also similar to the San Francisco 49ers, those outside run plays with Nick Chubb just are unstoppable sometimes. Brandon, break us down the Cleveland Browns line, please.
Yeah, so, you know, I wrote about this and, you know, a season ago, the Browns, they ran the football arguably at the most efficient level. And according to Next Gen Stats, the Browns faced an 8-man box at the league's 9th highest rate. Yet Nick Chubb was able to manage the 2nd highest total yards over expected average, with actual yards per attempt of 5.6 yards per attempt, which is incredible, right? So even when there were struggles on the offensive line, having a guy like Nick Chubb or Kareem Hunt as your 1-2 punch back there can mask some of those issues for the run game so that the offensive line can further improve. So I feel like this is a line that's going to just continue to ascend in the continuity of this team altogether. Second year with their new head coach from a year ago, Kevin Stefanski. I feel like his system just got started late last year, and it's just going to continue to roll.
Well, they were rolling, and those 8-man boxes disappeared in the second half of the season when Baker started playing way better. So... third on the list, the Los Angeles Rams. Surprising here, because they've actually been pretty thin at line the past couple years with injuries to Andrew Whitworth and whatnot. Brandon, how did the Rams sneak up into third here?
You know, what's crazy to me about the Rams' offensive line and what they're able to do offensively. First off, we already know that McVay, like Shanahan, wants to run the football to set everything up. One of the other things that I wanted to measure here, I mean, statistically, I can't really say without seeing Matt Stafford on the field in LA first and how they're going to utilize him, but just based on what I know with Sean McVay, this was kind of a thought process behind this, but Their ranking is based on obviously the skill set of the players and how this offensive line will work with their inside outside zone scheme and what McVay likes to do, but also the pressure that Matthew Stafford is going to take off of this offensive line. Teams won't be able to load up. They're not just going to say, okay, we're going to force Matt Stafford to beat us because Matt Stafford will find a way to beat you. This is just a different level of quarterback for McVay. So I think that's really the big driver for this offensive line grade.
Andrew Whitworth, man, does not get enough credit. He's almost 40 and he's out here still performing at a Pro Bowl level. Yeah, that's incredible.
He's up there. He's up there. Rams, man, they're another offensive line that I think had some inconsistent moments last year, but then we also saw weeks where they fully put it together and the running backs in that backfield had some big games. So,
man, see a lot of potential. I'm excited for the combo of Cam Akers and Henderson. They really complement each other really well. It's going to be a fun, both of them healthy. I think Akers is going to be the workhorse, but Henderson's as good as a change of pace back as you can have. All right, then closing out the last two teams for run blocking, we have the New England Patriots, who went out and reacquired Trent Brown, who they developed, as they usually do. They develop a no-name offensive lineman prospect, and then they let him walk and sign to another team for a ton of money. And they usually perform for a couple years, but then fall off, and then they bring him back on a discount. So, Trent Brown, did he really boost them that much this year? The acquisition?
I think Trent Brown, personally, left tackle, big boy, big body, like 6'8", 340.
Yeah.
I think he'll help them more on Cam Newton's blind side more than anything. But whenever you have a big body like that up front, it always helps the run game, for sure.
Yeah. And they're definitely building up to that. I know that, you know, looking at the personnel usage over the past few seasons, the Patriots have been an 11 personnel base offense since 2018 at around 53% of the time. They're lined up with one back and one tight end while boasting only a 2% 12 personnel rate in 2020. They had a 13% rate in 2019 with 12 personnel, and in 2018, they had 5%. So again, what does this mean? It means to me, based on bringing in two solid, high-paid tight ends like you did, that you expect to perform, you're gonna be adding them a lot. So I see them changing from that base 11 personnel more to a 12 personnel, and they're gonna focus on that run game hardcore.
I like it.
And it's amazing that they're ranked this high, even after letting All-Pro guard Joe Thuney go to the Kansas City Chiefs. Closing out the run blocking list, surprise, surprise, not really. Baltimore Ravens listed as fifth, but we have a little bit of breaking news here. As of today, the Ravens, they've been kind of missing that left tackle position a little bit, or right tackle, excuse me.
What, Brown, yeah?
Yeah, with letting Brown go to the Kansas City. They signed Juwan James, who had he had a problem with the Denver Broncos. I don't know the details.
The
he's working out. He tore his Achilles basically at home or working out on his own. So they cut him and none of that money was guaranteed.
Yeah, it's wild. But the Ravens just signed him to a 2-year deal. So
He'll play for one of those years. He ain't coming back this season.
I don't think it's this year. Anytime soon, anyway.
Yeah, that's bold to just sign him. Well, I guess that's cheap, though, if you can get a starting right tackle next year.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, this is, I mean, we already know the Ravens the last 2 years with Lamar at quarterback, you know, Mark Ingram from one of these years, a committee backfield a year ago. This offensive line, even when it struggles, they find a way to, you know, win at the point of attack, so to speak, and take advantage of what they can in the run game. But they've led the NFL the last 2 years in rushing. I believe in 2018, Lamar's first year, they were second to Seattle. I don't see much of a change there. I feel like the run game will set up the pass game. And now with the addition of some additional wide receivers in this offense to help Lamar. I think that that's going to help take some pressure off of that run game. Not that it matters, because again, they really do take advantage of the numbers in the box, so to speak, having that additional, dynamic of Lamar Jackson back there. So,
yeah, and I think the Ravens do a fairly good job just plugging and replacing. You know, they had Marshall Yonder, who retired kind of unexpectedly, and then you trade away Orlando Brown just a few months ago, and then they had to deal with injury along the offensive line all of last year. I believe Ronnie Stanley even went down for a little bit. So the Ravens, that's who they are. I mean, that's their pedigree, right? Like, we can go back to Ray Rice and go back to Jamal Lewis, and even, what's my man, Justin Forsett, who had some crazy gear too. And I mean, Look, that's their DNA, is running the ball. So them being inside the top five doesn't shock me at all. It's probably Brandon being a little political, Alex, and probably Collins, saying, hey, why can't I put them up here? So Alex Collins, yeah, that's another one.
So let's hop over to the pass blocking side of the rankings.
Hey!
Where we have a familiar face at the top. The number two run blocking line is the number one pass blocking line, the Cleveland Browns. That's tough. That's wild. Yeah.
I mean, every time I look at the Browns and their roster, and I said this to CJ, I was texting him yesterday about it. Like, it's just insane how this roster is built right now and just how talented this team is. It's scary to even think about. I mean, ultimately, everything to me looks like Tampa Cleveland, right? Being the best two teams in the NFL right now. In terms of the passing attack for Cleveland, I think a lot of it is predicated on that run game, right? We just talked about that, the play action pass, getting Baker out on the edges of the defense. I think that they do a lot to protect their offensive line and protect Baker Mayfield. I think we're going to see a lot. Well, not as much. I think Baker might, get more acclimated in the pocket this year, hopefully for Cleveland's sake, but you're going to still see a lot of the same stuff this season to protect the offensive line.
Sitting at number two, a surprising face here, the Arizona Cardinals. Now, the Arizona Cardinals did bring in Pro Bowl center from the Raiders, Rodney Hudson.
Yes. Yeah.
And that, I mean, I said it before with Alex Mack, I'll echo it again. A good center can make a decent line a good line.
Yeah, so he definitely is the biggest, upgrade, so to speak, for this team. They had Mason Cole at center a year ago. Really low-graded player, hasn't really performed well. He had moments where he was okay, but again, the addition of Rodney Hudson kind of solidified this for them and really helped bolster a line that was actually improving quite a bit on its own, except for that area. But you got Kyler Murray back there. He does a lot to protect that offensive line with his legs and his ability. So some of the whole, man, like when you look at, the amount of times, like, I have a stat in here about, like, blown assignments by players. And ironically, it's the tackle spots for Arizona where assignments would be blown the most. And it's really honestly because they're out there on an island trying to hold blocks and sustain blocks for a longer period of time because Kyler is so creative. So, yeah, they're definitely up there. Team on the rise on the offensive line. Everything's going to come down to creativity on offense and what they're able to do with all these playmakers.
That's so true with a mobile quarterback. I remember hearing an interview with Atlanta's offensive lineman back in the day when Mike Vick first stepped onto the scene. And they're like, listen, man, you can only block, but so much. He's just he starts running around and, we don't really know which way to push people. Like it's a wild card. You know what I mean? So number three on the list, I thought they'd be a little higher on the run list. I was a little surprised. But we have the Indianapolis Colts, who obviously they have all world left guard.
Eric Fisher.
Don't tell him.
No. Oh, Quentin Nelson.
Yeah,
left tackle Nelson. Eric Fisher.
The one
CJ is skeptical of.
Quentin Nelson, the only offensive lineman that's getting highlight reel pancakes online shown off. You know, he's just a beast. But they have some holes on the outside when it comes to the tackle position, but they're projected to be number three for pass. Where were they on rushing, Brandon?
I would assume they're probably somewhere in the top 10 or 12 still.
Yeah, I would picture the bottom of 10.
They are literally 11th. So
okay, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So, again, like, you know, this is another solid offensive line. Now, they don't have – well, they didn't have a quarterback a year ago with really any athleticism, to be honest. But I can say, or we can say, that Carson Wentz does have some mobility too. That will help improve what they want to do on offense. Now, I mean, he'll have to prove it, obviously, but I think a lot of it will hinge on how quick of a decision maker is Carson Wentz still. And, you know, in order for Indianapolis, again, a quarterback can attribute to sacks, right? He holds onto the ball too long, and it's not necessarily the offensive lineman's fault, right? When the pressure gets there or he takes a sack, that can be blamed on the quarterback, for example, or graded against the quarterback. Carson Wentz, if he is a better quarterback in this system, with this head coach, former OC with Philadelphia, then I feel like the offensive line is going to be great.
For sure. And you know Carson Wentz is thanking his lucky stars. He has someone like Quentin Nelson in front of him after last year in Philly. So let's look at the number four team, the Green Bay Packers, obviously anchored by all-world left tackle, arguably the best left tackle in the league, David Bacciarotti. He suffered a season-ending knee injury in practice in late December 2020, but he will be back this year. Now, will he be blocking for Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, that's the big question.
Love not being a good quarterback.
I'm Brandon. Before you give us your soliloquy about why Green Bay is fourth, I'm actually kind of shocked at this, just because knowing how you create your list, and it's kind of, you know, more so a projection than anything. You know, just with them losing Corey Linsley, who's out west now, and then with Bakhtiari going down with the torn ACL. Was in the playoffs? It was sometime in December.
No, it was right before the playoffs.
Okay. Well, look, that's two all-pro caliber offensive linemen who are now gone. And as you always say, sum of all parts. So what's your analysis or your thinking here for the Green Bay? Because I'm a little worried, man. Even if Aaron Rodgers is back there.
My thing is Aaron Rodgers does change it. The rookie center thing, we had that conversation. We were arguing about that through text. The rookie center thing makes sense, but at the same time, if I've got Aaron Rodgers back there to kind of help guide things, then as a coach or as teammates of Aaron Rodgers and this team, then I feel good. I feel more comfortable, but without Aaron Rodgers, and then you put Love back there with a new center, potentially David Bakhtiari not even being back for who knows. I mean, based on what is on paper right now and kind of guessing Bakhtiari is going to be there and Aaron Rodgers is still on the roster at quarterback, then that's where they are. It'll drop off dramatically if not, you know what I'm saying? So as of right now, it's kind of the way it looks. I almost thought remove Rodgers now and just remove him from the equation, ding him for that, and maybe even ding him for Bakhtiari. Don't give him a good grade, whatever, move him back. But again, it's hard to do that based on
The cool thing about the Packers offense is with an offensive system like LaFleur's, it's a lot like McVay's. They keep the defense honest by running the ball. So it makes it a little easier with play action.
It does. If you block for the quarterback. If your quarterback's Aaron Rodgers, it really helps. But
Look, everything is predicated on the offensive line with this offense. We've talked about it. We talk about the Rams and McVay and the Niners and Shanahan. And guess what? We've talked about it before. The offense, all of them are the same, right? It's predicated on running the ball, play action, getting horizontal, then getting vertical. All right? Well, it's going to be harder to run the ball when you don't have your all-pro left tackle and your all-pro center, right? So I don't expect them to run the ball quite as good as they did last year because of those losses. which then leads to, okay, play action doesn't quite work as much. And then it seems like not too long ago, we forgot, just 3-4 years ago, Aaron Rodgers was running for his life back there, almost like he was against Tampa Bay in 2020. And that's the last thing you want, because guess what's going to happen? Aaron Rodgers, tackle, another broken collarbone. So I get Brandon, Aaron Rodgers back there. It will benefit the young rookie center, but I don't think it's conducive for success for any of the parties involved in Green Bay right now. For the run game, for Aaron Rodgers, like I could see it getting a little hazy, a little fuzzy.
Aaron's using this as his leverage, though. Like, hey, you know, rookie center, new quarterback, never played a down. You know, it's going to be interesting.
Give me Kirk Cousins' contract, fully guaranteed, yeah. And I'll come back. I want that new money.
It's true. And fire the front office.
Well, the last slot is a line that's kind of fallen from grace. They were the elite line in the league for a few years, and then the tragedy struck with the center, Friedrich. He got... What happened to him? He had like a bone disease or something.
Oh, Travis. No, it was he had Guillain-Barré syndrome, which attacks the nervous system.
Yeah.
And so yeah, they kind of suffered hard without him last year. It was tough.
But then you also have Tyrone Smith, who at one point in time was probably the best left tackle in the league. He's had a lot of injuries, nicked him up a little bit. He's still an above average left tackle, though. Like, he's still good. And then you have all-pro, all-world left guard Zach Martin as well, who's just clearing out the trenches for Zeke. And but the one guy on this line that's stepped up a lot in the last few years has been Lyle Collins. He's always had the tools, he's had the athleticism, but he never really put it all together. And I think last year and the year before, we've started seeing him play more up to his potential.
Cowboys are in a prove it mode for me. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, you just signed Dak to a big deal. Your O-line has been rebuilding since the diagnosis of Travis Frederick. I think they've rebuilt well. I think they could very well be a top five offensive line in the league. But
yeah, to touch on the
paper,
whole,
they look great.
Yeah. Okay. And Collins, you know, obviously, when healthy in general, this is a player that's super versatile, inside, outside player. He's a guy who you can flip around on the offensive line if necessary. He can move, and he's a hell of a run blocker in space. You get him out in space for somebody like Zeke, for example, if you're running something, I don't know, a toss sweep or a counter or something where he's moving.
I love you, Brandon. I love you. I love you to death. I know that works. Yeah. You feel uncomfortable, but good job. Because look, if I know anything about my team, and Brandon, you just hit it like head on. Lyle Collins, for the people that don't know, he was projected to be a top 10 pick 4 or 5 years ago. He ended up he was getting questioned during the draft because his girlfriend was actually murdered, which he did not get drafted, went undrafted. Cowboys signed
him. Was he undrafted? Wow.
He was undrafted. Cowboys signed him. They started him at guard his first year or two in the league, did really, really well. Then they bumped him out to right tackle. Not last year, because last year he was dealing with the hip injury that had him out the entire year. But the year before that, in 2019, I think he graded out at like 85. He was one of the best right tackles in the league. So along with Lyle Collins, if Tyron Smith can, you know, stay fairly healthy, Zach Martin, then the potential is there. And Brandon, I know you love your Big Ten guys. And Tyler Biadasz out of Wisconsin.
That's the one guy. He
showed promise last year. He struggled at times last year. But again, he had 3 or 4 different quarterbacks back there. It was a lot of moving parts on the offensive line. So I expect him to maybe take a step forward if he can also stay healthy, because he did have some durability concerns at Wisconsin. But yeah, this Cowboys offensive line, even though they're somewhat aged, they still have some young pieces there that still bring some upside and potential to them.
Love it.
Well, guys, that's our ranking of the top five pass rushing and run blocking offensive line units in the NFL. And we, you know, these are the little things that when you're thinking about drafting somebody, if you're putting two players up next to each other, running back, who you're going to take in the fantasy draft, you might as well look at their line. If they have one has an elite line, the other one doesn't, may make your decision a little easier. Same thing for a quarterback. But yeah, guys, you know, we got to cover them all. Defense is next in the next coming weeks, so that's going to be fun. I love me some defensive rankings.
What about pass rush first? You want to do pass rush? Or you want
pass rush? Yeah. Pass rush for sure. Well, right. Most important position in the league.
What pass rush? Okay, I guess that makes sense. We're gonna do pass rush and then like run stoppers and then linebackers and then DBs.
So is Jamal Adams gonna be ranked in the pass rush?
Oh my gosh! See, this is why a few days ago I was on the toilet and I was having an epiphany and I was like, you know what? We should just do defenders.
Yo, you're CJ, you hit the nail on the head because I only have three categories: pass rush, run stop, pass cover.
Okay. Nice.
So we can find a way to make that work.
We'll shout out to Ronde Barber, the GOAT cornerback blitz.
He didn't go to USC or anything, did he?
No, Ronde, he went to UVA, didn't he?
I'm aware.
Yeah, I think he did.
I was troubling. Yeah. Because you gave him a shout out, and I thought he was connected to USC or LA or something. Or, you know, I was trolling.
Oh, okay. Not your best work.
But Ronde Barber, shout out Southwest VA. We in here.
All my life been poor,
but it really don't matter no more. That's my song.
I remember that. Who sang that again?
Nappy Roots.
Okay. The Kings of Leon.
What about clips? You don't do clips?
Hey, now we talking.
Coffins. Yeah, no, this is a treat. CJ worked on a little something for us today where he's talking about young players and the warning signs of the decisions they make with their money.
That's for sure. So, look, I know we've been joking around this offseason. We've approached the dog days of the NFL season because it's year round. So NFL's still in season. We're just in the dog days of it right now. And, you know, we joke around about these guys out here who's spending money. We've seen it on documentaries and everywhere about just players just spending money and not being as frugal as what they should. And a few weeks ago, Woody, I know your boy Kadarius Toney, newly acquired Giants receiver, I saw him showing off some new tats and some jewelry. So I'm like, he's going to be a bust.
He's a Florida boy. You expect anything less?
No, for sure. So, you know, just so far this offseason, we've seen rookie draft picks. As I said, Kadarius Toney, Patrick Surtain II, Trey Lance.
Patrick Surtain had a big chain, didn't he?
Nice. Yeah. Very nice.
No, come on.
I'm going to get to that. You guys follow along with me on the outline, too, because I put some links on there if you're interested in seeing any of this stuff. But Trey Lance, among others, to sport some pretty impressive pieces of jewelry. And I joke around and suggest we could go ahead and add them to the all-bust-down team, pun intended. However, blowing big bread early on material things does not necessarily suggest that they will be busts. So let's take a look at a few. As I told you guys, check out Patrick Surtain. He had a PS2, a custom-made charm that was beautiful. I don't really try to do some digging and see how much he paid for it. Couldn't find anything out there. But Trey Lance, he also just, got some custom-made jewelry, beautiful. There's this guy by the name of Leo Frost. He's on Instagram, and he has the NFL by the balls when it comes to the custom-made jewelry. I've seen guys like Justin Jefferson and all kinds of guys go to him. So Justin Jefferson, offensive rookie of the year, broke records last year. So, again, it doesn't necessarily mean that because these guys are spending money early that they're not focused. So I got a couple examples just from last year's draft class and how they did.
I feel like you're the black Colin Cowherd right now talking about Tony Romo and Matthew Stafford wearing backwards hats.
Word up. That was swaggy, too. I'm a Tony Romo fan. That's back when the quarterback swag was, like, different, right? Quarterback swag nowadays has changed. But back then, I used to like the backwards hat and the, you know, but hey.
Hell of a golfer.
But, all right, Joe Burrow, number one pick from 2020 from last year. Many have seen the number 9 pendant. It's 18 karat VVS diamond, white gold chain, and is roughly worth about $10,000. So not a lot of money. However, this particular chain and pendant was a gift to Joe Burrow by Louisiana rapper and big-time LSU football fan Lil Boosie.
Boosie
badass. Joe Burrow had a successful rookie year before turning his ACL. He completed 65% of his passes with 13 touchdowns and just 5 interceptions. Next up, we have Patrick Queen, Joe Burrow's teammate at LSU, and he's the current linebacker for the Baltimore Ravens. Just finished his rookie year. He dropped $45,000 on a Level Up pendant and an 18-karat yellow gold chain. It's beautiful. Patrick Queen started all 16 games for Baltimore's rookie year and was named to the all-rookie team. So, again, spending big bread on these big chains does not necessarily mean these guys aren't focused. Next up, Jerry Jeudy. He went all out with the two-tone and white gold JJ4 and JEW pendants with VS diamonds on a 14-karat yellow VS gold diamond Cuban chain worth $100,000 total. On top of that, Jeudy also got an 18-karat yellow gold Audemars, an AP watch for those who aren't familiar. That's super expensive. And it's flooded with VS2 diamonds. Jerry Jeudy caught 52 passes for 856 yards and 3 touchdowns. So he had a pretty good rookie year. He was among the lead leaders in drops last year with 10. So maybe if he catches more balls and stop trying to put diamonds in his chain, his hands will be a little bit better.
He was blinded by the bling, man.
Blinded by the bling. I like that. Another one, Javon Kinlaw. He copped a Jesus piece with chocolate brown diamonds on a VS diamond tennis chain worth $45,000.
He
got a black Jesus piece. A chocolate brown Jesus piece. But the 6'6", 310-pound defensive lineman from South Carolina, he underperformed his rookie year. He graded among the worst at his position. So, I mean, hey, Javon Kinlaw, put down the chains, bro, and go work on your technique. And last but not least, I had to save the best for last. My guy, CeeDee Lamb, he went with a number 32 pendant made with two-tone, 14-karat yellow and white gold on a VS diamond Cuban chain worth about $90,000. CeeDee was tracking to have an incredible rookie year before Dak Prescott went down in week 6. He still managed 74 catches for 952 yards and 7 touchdowns. So all of that to say, these guys, look, they're spending bread. A lot of the guys I named are from the SEC. So half of them had big chains before they even got to the NFL. But whether you like it or not, these guys, they got the money to spend money on stupid things. And more power to them. For that reason, I don't know if y'all can hear it, but, you know, I want my little bit of bling today to, you know, for this little segment. So that's all I got.
Nice. That's an 80% positive rate. CJ. So, I mean, it wasn't as bad. There's only really one miss, unless you want to count Jeudy as somewhat.
Right, exactly. There you go. Yeah, thanks. So it's great actually analysis, Brandon. Always ready to put the numbers with the... Oh, man, that's why I love you, Brandon.
So, yeah, our assertion was somewhat
a lot of man love on this episode. I love it. I love the vibes. All right, guys. Well, that is going to wrap up our episode today. As always, check out our socials, the number 5 Tool Sports Podcast.com, at the number 5 Tool Sports Podcast on Instagram. And then also check out our sister site, Football Scout 365, where you can get all of Brandon's rankings and off-season packages. It's just loaded. Loaded with nuggets for your fantasy likings. As always, guys, thanks for tuning in. Shout out MCash for the fire theme song. And let's hear the beats. Be out.
I couldn't stop if I wanted to. A 9 to 5 is something that I don't want to do. Sit in the cubicle.